You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Well, if you're not at work today, you're like everybody else in this building, except us. There are three people at work today. Q, Daners, and me.
That's it.
Nobody else. Not even the sports guys.
We're putting in that grind, you know.
Yeah, we are.
Not even the sports guys. And one of the biggest stories today is sports.
I'll be honest, though. Last week I was off on vacation. And then this week, man, I picked the right time to go on vacation. Because this week we worked Monday. We were off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. And we worked today. Tomorrow's Saturday and Sunday, of course. And then Mizzou plays in their bowl game on Monday.
Love that team. Love it.
You love Mizzou?
A couple times a year.
When they go to the bowl?
I love them so much.
And then so we're off on Monday because of the bowl game. And then Tuesday is New Year's Eve and Wednesday is New Year's Day. So in the course of 3 weeks, I will have worked a total of 4 days.
It's nice, isn't it?
I can get used to this Dana-like schedule.
I know. It's really nice.
We're going to do Festivus Friday coming your way right after the 5 o'clock news. And that is brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fix today at Q39KC.com. If you did watch the Chiefs and Steelers on Wednesday, Christmas Day, or the Ravens and Texans, both of those games were on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It was a huge success. But would you care to guess what people watched the most in those two games?
What do you mean?
Well, where the ratings peaked.
Well, Kansas City, clearly.
It was Beyonce's halftime performance. That is when Netflix got the most people to watch.
It was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Post Malone pulling up in the pickup truck, the dancing, the choreography. That was a Super Bowl-esque style show.
Well, and that's kind of how they build it. I think it was more post-performance,
they said
that was the Super Bowl halftime show part two.
Yeah, I agree.
The NFL's Netflix debut was a success as far as streaming goes, but even with Beyonce performing at halftime, the game's ratings were roughly on par with last year's Christmas viewership, which was aired on broadcast and cable TV.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens-Texans game, which was a turd, drew 24.3 million viewers in the United States. The earlier Chiefs-Steelers game was 24.1 million viewers. The games were the most streamed games in NFL history. Viewership for the Ravens-Texans peaked at the halftime show, dubbed the Beyonce Bowl, with more than 27 million viewers.
Did you miss the moment where an announcer called the Chiefs cheaters? Because I missed it until I saw a story about it. And thought, oh gosh, is this clickbait? Like, what is going on with this? No. One of the Netflix announcers got caught calling the Chiefs cheaters.
48 yards to run. Now, right down the middle to give the Chiefs a 29.
To give the cheaters a 20. That's what he said, isn't it, Q?
Play it again. Let me hear it again.
It's during the kick.
48 yards to run. Right down the middle to get the Chiefs a 29.
Oh, I heard Chiefs.
Are
we sure that's the right clip?
Clearly his words were a mistake, but given what other fans, have stated about the team all year, the words should not be taken lightly, writes one sports writer-ding-a-ling person. The two-time defending Super Bowl champions never had a real challenge during this game. The Steelers have dropped three straight as their chances of capturing the AFC North took another hit. Blah, 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 blah. I'm telling you, people don't like us.
I've been saying that for years. You didn't believe me.
I didn't believe you.
Because you live in the Kansas City bubble.
Yep.
Where everybody is rah-rah Chiefs and everything is red and yellow. Go outside of this city and they hate the Kansas City Chiefs. We are the new Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. We are the old Joe Montana and the San Francisco 49ers. We are the Troy Aikman and Dallas Cowboys of the 1990s.
They hate us because they hate us.
Well, that may be true. There is no place like home to watch the Wicked movie. Universal Pictures, the studio behind the hit film, announcing yesterday that Wicked will be available to buy or rent.
When?
On December 31st.
I'm in. I wanted to go see it with my daughters, but one of my daughters has already gone to the theater to see it. The other daughter's working and is like, man, I don't know if I want to go to a theater. I will buy or rent. What is it? $20 to rent it?
Let me see if the price is in this
story.
It's
usually about $20. If it's brand new, it's usually about $20.
Yeah, it doesn't say what the price
is. And after the last experience I had at an actual theater with the guy on my right smoking weed the whole time and the woman down from him talking the whole time, I can't wait to watch that thing at home.
So it's going to be on Prime and on Apple TV. And you can rent it or you can buy it.
I'm in.
What was the last movie you saw in theaters?
Gladiator 2.
Oh, okay. All
just,
right.
Just 2 weeks ago.
I was going to, the way you were describing it, it made it sound like it was, you know, a long lost time ago.
No, it was such a good movie, but it was such a bad movie going experience.
The guy next to you was smoking weed or he was vaping weed?
You missed it. You were not here when I talked about this story. He was vaping marijuana the entire time. And he was next to me, near me.
Was he trying to be discreet?
No. Not at all. And when I first smelled it, I was like, really, dude? But it went on, Scott, the entire... And that is not a short movie. That is
no,
not a Sam.
Not. It's 2.5.
It went on the entire movie. And I'm like, ugh, I am not a prude. It's not my thing, but I'm not a prude. I would prefer you not light up anything.
Well, yeah, it's
in
illegal.
In a theater.
I mean, that movie is right between a mam and a lamb. And so, 'cause I think it runs like 2 hours and 38 minutes. You're new to the show, Q. A Mam is a middle-ass movie, and A Lamb is a long-ass movie.
It's long.
And A Sam is a short-ass movie.
But it is very good. And I just, you know, first time I had been in that particular theater for a long time, will not go back. And I thought the other night when I was scrolling around, I actually thought, when is Wicked coming
December 31st. Isn't it amazing how quickly...
I cannot see someone lighting up in the middle of Wicked, but you never know.
Isn't it amazing how quickly they get it into streaming?
You know why?
Well, because there's still money to be made.
There's still money to be made, and the drop-off after the first, 2 weeks at the theater?
Three, maybe.
It drops off a cliff.
Yeah. And so they want to hit while the iron's hot, and I get that. And with streaming, you can charge somebody $20. Whereas, you know, back in the old days of Blockbuster or whatever, it would be like a 4, 5, 6 month delay from when it was in theaters.
Or years. Remember when E.T. came out? That was years before you could buy that on VHS or whatever.
But it would normally be like 4 to 6 months, and then it would end up in Blockbuster or it would be available on cable or whatever. And Blockbuster, you know, you're only paying $3.95, $4 or whatever to rent the VHS or DVD. And the studios aren't making nearly as much money. Now, as soon as it starts to drop off at the theater, you put it out on streaming and boom, you can charge $20 because it's still hot.
Yep.
People still want to watch it. They're willing to pay $20. And they're gonna make millions putting Wicked. Everything's at 2 this year, except
and
Wicked.
You know what else? When you watch it at home, you can sing as loud as you want for all the words you hear. And no one is going to yell at you because apparently it's not supposed to be a sing-along, although everyone wants to sing. They're like, don't sing. Let me tell you this. I would rather you sing next to me than smoke marijuana for 3 hours. Sing away, sister.
Okay. I actually thought about this the other day. It was this morning when I was reading this story and putting it in my stack about Wicked coming out on streaming over the weekend or Monday, whatever it is, Tuesday. How is it, because I went, I'm not going to say with whom, to go see Wicked in New York City a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2018. I knew the premise behind the show.
Yeah.
But I didn't know any of the songs, so there was no threat of me singing during the play.
Your ears are safe, America.
Yeah, but this has only been, as far as I understand it, a production that has been on Broadway or brought to cities like, you know, played at the music hall or whatever. How is it that everybody knows the lyrics to these songs?
Are they the same? I'm asking. I don't know.
I'm assuming.
Are the songs the same? I will tell you there are a handful of musicals where you immediately know the songs. Phantom of the Opera. There are a couple of hauntingly beautiful songs that, like, I even bought on Spotify. They're so beautiful, right? The songs from Rent, the songs from Cats.
Les Mis.
Definitely Les Mis, Jean Valjean. All of those have one or two, or if you're talking about Hamilton, all of them, that have, even some of them have crossed over into commercial hits, right? But Wicked would be no different.
But the reason I know or knew before we went to, when Sean and I got married, we went to London on our honeymoon and went to see Les Mis. I knew the songs because I had bought the CD.
Got it.
And I've never known that there's a Wicked CD that's available. Now, Hamilton, I know those songs because Maya loved that play, and I still have the two CD set of Hamilton. But how do people know these songs? I wouldn't know a single song from Cats.
The soundtrack debuted at number 2 on the Billboard 200 album chart, making it the highest debut ever for a film adaptation of a stage musical. It is also the biggest week for a full-length theatrical film soundtrack since A Star is Born with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper in 2018.
913-586-7798. Speaking of...
My God, Scott, the soundtrack has grossed $4,130,000 on Spotify alone.
913-586-7798. Quentin Morris, Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks on KMBZ. So, Dana and I both did something over the brief 3-day break that we had that never in a million years did we think we would ever do. We did it separately. We watched that stupid documentary, Chiefsaholic, A Wolf in Chief's Clothing.
That I've made fun of since we heard about its release.
It's on Prime. It's about Xavier Babadar, who rose to celebrity as a Kansas City Chiefs superfan before being arrested for bank robberies. The story became only more bonkers after his arrest, allegations of serial bank robberies on the way to Chiefs away games, an escape from law enforcement, and more than $1 million in gambling to launder stolen money. The documentary is actually pretty good.
I thought it was gripping. It is well done. It is well told. Somehow, the creators, producers, writers, all of those things convinced him to allow them to tag along after he was arrested for the first time for the bank robberies, and they had put an ankle monitor on him as he camped out in this hotel room in the town where he was arrested. They swoop in and say, hey, let us follow you, and he goes, okay. And so it is a very in-depth, in some respects, uncomfortable look at someone who clearly has issues, clearly is a felony bank robber that leaves a wake of destruction with the employees that are traumatized for the rest of their lives. These were robberies with what appeared to be a gun. And I took exception to the fact that his attorney at one point said, you know, this was a BB gun. Okay, well, at the point that you've got a gun shoved into your face or your back or your gut, and you're being told open that vault.
You don't know and you don't care.
You don't know and you don't care.
That's right. And by the way, his attorney is a dork. I mean, can we drop the football puns when you're doing a news conference?
Why was I so uncomfortable watching parts of this with respect to his gambling addiction? Because he comes off like an immature, foul-mouthed DB is what you called him. And that's I cannot disagree with that. But also his mom, Scott, during many parts of this later on, because I know you haven't watched all of it.
I've watched almost all of it.
They are essentially living out of their car.
Yeah.
And I don't think I necessarily deny that he had a very screwed up, probably troubled childhood. A lot of people listening did. Doesn't mean you go robbing banks. But there's something about his mom and her mental state that is hard to watch because clearly there's something going on there. I don't know what. I don't want to call her a bag lady. I don't know what else you call her. They're living out of a car, urinating in plastic bags.
And they were saying during the documentary, the law enforcement, that there's no evidence anywhere that he ever held a job, ever.
Ever. Said he went to K-State. No evidence that is true.
That's right. And then he apparently claimed he lived in Overland Park. There was no address for him in Overland Park. In fact, when they went to the address, I believe it was a post office or some like a factory or something. And it turns out that he's living basically in a bar, like stays at the bar all the time and maybe rents out a room, or they don't even know. They're trying to piece together where he lived. And it's a vagabond kind of lifestyle where he just goes from place to place throughout Kansas City.
The one thing they didn't do, and I, you know, you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. And he clearly agreed to sit down with them. Whether they paid him money for that, I don't know. I don't care. But he sits down for a lot of this. And then he goes on the run, I will remind all of you. Mm-hmm. He literally absconds, skips town, has a bail bondsman chasing him for much of the documentary. But I wish they had really pinned him down and said, why the lies? You want us to believe you now that we're sitting here watching you watch your favorite team. Why lie about where you went to school? Why lie about where you lived? Why all of the lies?
Or that he was a manager at a warehouse when he never was. He worked in the warehouse for a very short period of time and was never the manager. Here's just a portion of the trailer.
Superfan is kind of a funny term.
They just love, bleed, die, cheese.
This is Cheese Kingo!
It's intense.
Being a superfan, it can go to your head.
It's addicting. You feel the need to fulfill that status.
When I first met Chiefsaholic.
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 I don't want to compare him to a god. But
he was
gonna
stop it right there.
He was a big gambler.
There were a couple of times, and I said this out loud as we were watching it. This makes us look so bad as a city.
Yeah.
It makes us look so bad. And people who already hate the team are now going to think that all fans are, you know, a little over the top.
I don't want to compare him to a god.
Please. Nobody knew who he was until he robbed a bank.
Apparently not. Apparently they did.
So
I watched this whole
video. The first 10 or 15 minute montage of all of the different super fans and who is this guy. You've got to get through that to get to what I think is a very well told, well done documentary. Just the stuff of the bondsman chasing him all over trying to find him. By the way, he posted that bond for $80,000. This bondsman had zero connection to Babadar, said, look, I'm sticking my neck out for you. If you don't show up in court, I'm out 80,000. And then guess what?
Mystery.
His name is Xavier Babadar.
This is how they're keeping tabs on the wolf, man. Don't think it hasn't crossed my mind. I just have my come on off and go to the Super Bowl.
This man is now on the run.
I will chase him till the end of time.
Someone told me he placed an $80,000 bet.
We knew that there was a bigger story here.
It seems like it should be a movie, but it's real.
We're going to hit the bank like Chiefsaholic, baby.
This is...
Jeez.
One fan says in the movie, quote, I don't have any problem with people having alternate personas. The problem is when the persona becomes the purpose versus the purpose being the game.
Here's a review. Where did you find this review?
I think the best review from the show comes from the Kansas Reflector. KansasReflector.com. Yeah, a journalist named Eric Thomas. It is very well done.
He writes, in these moments, he reveals, he being Chiefsaholic, he reveals himself as profane and immature, trash-talking his imagined doubters with tirades and celebrations pointed at the camera. This access allows us to know the man behind the mugshots.
The phones are ringing. I'm curious, did you feel sympathy for him?
No, I did not.
I felt sort of embarrassment.
For him?
Yes,
when he's, the city.
When he's watching the game like a crazy person.
In a hotel room.
In a hotel room with an ankle monitor on with $100,000 on the line. Because he's so far gone with that gambling addiction that behind the scenes we now know he's robbing banks to fuel it. It's an uncomfortable look, just a peek at what it might be to have your entire life dominated by gambling.
Here we go a little bit later in this review. This is the strongest theme in the documentary. If NFL superfans are only celebrities when they dress up, if people don't recognize them in real life, and if people don't even know their real names, then where is their fame? Whether in a wolf mask or another costume, super fans in this movie are not who they pretend to be. It says it showcases the trapping of super fandom. I love your thoughts about you get an inside peek into the world of addiction gambling or gambling addiction.
He's watching that game as if his life depends on it. Some would say it did. Yeah, it did.
Well,
it,
not and, his and life, you, and, but his livelihood.
And you hear him say, I just want to help my mom and my brother. Well,
and we really need this game to do it.
We really need this game to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, dude,
you're lost.
Yeah. You are so lost.
Completely off the deep end. 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. Don't make fun of us. Dana watched it the other day just to see what it was all about. And then texted me this morning and says, you have to watch it. It's actually good. And she was right. It's well done. Netflix did, Prime did a very good job with this documentary. 913-586-7798.
We built this city on rock and roll. Built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
The greatest bad song of all time. Story here from the New York Times. It may seem strange to be discussing the ethics and aesthetics of bare feet in public during this Christmas season, a time when many of us are contemplating the allure of fuzzy slippers and fleece socks. But very public fashion rule breaking by celebrities has a way of starting a conversation, not to mention a trend. And Angelina Jolie did just that when she showed up for the Tonight Show couch in an elegant long black dress and no shoes. Now, she claimed that she had broken her toe the day before and couldn't find comfortable footwear. In any case, the decision to forego any kind of shoe or sock was quite a statement during what Ms. Jolie said was her first talk show gig in roughly a decade. It also reminded the author in the New York Times of when Kristen Stewart, during her stint at the Cannes Film Festival jury in 2018, got fed up with her high heels and simply mounted the red carpeted stairs without them. Believe it or not, there is a fashion law institute at Fordham University. And the founder there, Susan Scafidi, says, quote, most barefoot bands simply reflect private dress codes put in place by a restaurant or retailer and others concerned about safety and their potential liability for splinters, slips, and stubbed toes.
When I saw the photo, I went, ooh. And keep in mind, I do believe she is one of the most beautiful women in the world.
Strange but beautiful, yes.
I don't like the bare feet. I don't.
Why?
She's wearing a long black gown. You mean to tell me she couldn't have hobbled out in some something, socks or slippers? It's just, why? Maybe it's an American thing that we're grossed out by feet. I'm not grossed out by them, but it was jarring to see her sitting there in this long, elegant gown in bare feet.
But she was comfortable.
I'm sure she was. Well, as comfortable as you can be with a broken toe.
See, now I am anti-shoe.
Oh, I'm aware.
I hate shoes. I think they're gross and uncomfortable, but sometimes necessary.
I looked this up. Shoes themselves are not inherently bad for you, but wearing the wrong type or an improper fit can be detrimental to your, quote, foot health.
Well, duh. And what is foot health, pray tell?
A 2020 study, in fact, found that wearing minimal footwear was better than going barefoot for older people, improves posture and gait. Besides, they write, many of us, it's simply not practical to walk outside without shoes, and I would agree. I just assume if I don't have shoes on, I'm going to step on something that's going to kill me, like a Lego.
But you wear shoes in the house.
Yeah.
And I don't.
I can't stand not having shoes on in the house, or at least prison slides, something.
See, and I'm grossed out by where my foot has been throughout the day. Like, if you walk into a Quick Trip, how many pieces of spit are you stepping on?
Okay, but in walking around barefoot in your house, your feet are then touching your house floor, which I guess you could argue is cleaner than, yeah, than.
But if nobody ever wears, and we've had this debate before, I don't want to necessarily get into it again. If nobody ever wears a shoe into my house, and they don't, then my floor is relatively clean because nobody's spit from Quick Trip or oil or gasoline for while they're gassing up their car.
Yeah.
Or whatever's in a yard or whatever's in a work parking lot. None of that stuff ever enters my home because it is a hard and fast rule at my house. You take your shoes off when you come in the door. End of story, no debate. In fact, my daughter, Sarah, bought me a pair of bathroom slippers for Christmas, which I adore.
I would never wear no shoes, sand shoes, on a studio floor. Would you go barefoot and have your feet touch our floors here?
No, but I often wear flip-flops. I'm wearing closed-toed shoes today. But no, I would never let my feet touch these floors.
So this is not the first celebrity to go barefoot in public. The Bills wide receiver, Mac Hollins, he does not wear shoes while he's like going into the stadium. When there was 2 feet of snow on the ground during that Buffalo Bills game a couple weeks ago.
Two, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, he was walking into the stadium. He was not wearing shoes. He does not wear shoes. The only time he wears cleats is when he's on the football field. And as somebody who has been in a football locker room, that's disgusting.
Well, a good friend of the program, Michael Franti, the musician, notoriously never wears shoes, even on stage. I have never seen a pair of shoes on that man's feet. Ever.
I will say this. If anyone's going to not wear shoes and get away with it, it's Angelina Jolie. You just sort of assume she's, you know, she kind of beats to her own drum, which is fabulous.
From the text line, a number of people saying, I'm with you, Scott. I hate shoes. I do too. I cannot wait to get home tonight and take these things off. It's like a vice on my feet. Drives me insane.
Well, then that's one thing you and Angelina Jolie have in common.
Wow.
And the list probably stops there.
Wow. That Ooh. Hurt.
Remember she had a short, fiery romance with Billy Bob Thornton, who I'm strangely attracted to? We started watching Landman.
Okay.
Over the break.
So I watched the trailer the other night.
So good!
But it's on... it's on a service
Apple
we don't have.
TV, I think.
No, it's not on Apple. It's on the one that we don't
Paramount.
Have. Paramount.
You get Paramount through Prime. You just don't know it.
I do?
Yeah. Go to Amazon Prime. That's where Paramount lives. I know that because I was paying for it twice until I figured that out.
Oh. Then we will be starting Landman.
You will love
tonight.
It.
Tonight.
The character of his ex-wife is about as annoying as a female character can be in any show, but his performance is so outstanding. I think he's going to win an Emmy.
It's
about oil. I'm just going to tell you that. It's about oil.
Yeah.
And the way those contracts are delicately handled down south.
So I can't tell the rest of this joke, but you'll know what I'm talking about. There's a scene where he's in bed. I'm assuming it's his wife or girlfriend or whatever. And he's apparently snoring. And she says to him, I'm not going to put up with this for the next 30 years. Have you gotten to that scene yet?
I know what you're saying.
And... she makes a reference to a two-headed woman and some sort of a contest.
Yes.
And I laugh so hard I almost
It is
threw
very
up.
Quick. It is very it's very good. And it's a lot that I didn't understand about like oil, how the land is leased, how it's like Yellowstone with oil. Is how I describe it.
Is it written by the same guy, the Sheridan guy?
It might be written by the same guy. I think I read that. Demi Moore.
She's in it. That's
is
right.
in it.
There's another famous
John Hamm is in it.
It looks good. Somebody says Landman is run, do not walk.
Yeah, it is outstanding. And there's a huge nod to KU in one of the scenes in one of the earlier episodes. Their daughter is running in a track meet like for Texas Tech or something. It's clearly like a big, they're trying to do a Big 12, whatever it is. They zoom down to the track and one of the runners is wearing a KU jersey. And then you zoom out and there's a big Jayhawk tent there. And to me, that's a producer on the show has some connection to KU. Because there was a lot of Jayhawks in that
where
scene.
Where's the track meet? Is it at Texas
in
Tech?
Somewhere in Texas, okay, yeah.
913-586-7798. Don't forget, coming up at 5 o'clock, we will be doing Festivus Friday, the airing of the grievances Festivus Friday is brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fixed today at Q39KC.com.
I want to ask you, is there anything that you collect that you started out not meaning to collect? And let me read you a little story, and we might bring this out at 4 o'clock because I think it's so funny. If you follow Snarky in the Suburbs, fantastic writer. Sometimes she's a special to the star. You can follow her blog. She posts funny, fabulous stuff about the suburbs all the time. She wrote this a couple of years ago, actually, but it was in the Star a couple of weeks ago, and it's been in my stack for a while. She writes, got my first words of wisdom for this holiday season are be careful what gifts you ooh and awe over, because it could come back to bite you big time. 30 long years ago, I received a darling snow village from my mother-in-law as a Christmas present. For those of you blissfully unaware of the wonder of the holiday tchotchkes, a snow village is a brand of ceramics that depicts winter scenes with Yuletide flair. There's train stations, diners, ice cream shops, ski lodges. My first snow village was an old-fashioned movie theater. And she goes on and on and on, and then says, now 3 decades in, I am buried in snow villages. My lovely mother-in-law has given me at least one every year for Christmas, and I think finally they may be the death of me.
How many she got now?
So many styrofoam boxes that she cannot see her way through the basement. Like, it's become this, right, thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just the pain of bringing that stuff up every year and back. And maybe your thing is snow globes, which, by the way, did you know you're not supposed to travel with those or something?
Why?
I don't know. When I was down in Biloxi, they had these beautiful snow globes. And I thought, oh, I should bring some for the kids, maybe. And it said, FYI, like, warning, beware. You cannot carry it on. Like, you have to check it.
Well, you can't carry it on because there's more than 3 ounces of liquid
right.
in it.
So she said the artist was saying, basically, be careful because we've had people buy these.
And then you'd have to put it in your check luggage.
Yeah, or you have to throw it out or like whatever. Anyway.
That might break.
I am not a Christmas collector at all. I am a Christmas things getter away from me and throw away-er.
Mm-hmm.
So the Christmas thing is not my thing as far as snow village or snow globes or any of that stuff. But do you have anything like that that you unwittingly started collecting that has just never ended?
I never expected to be a collector of CDs.
You do have a lot.
I have 850.
That's a lot.
I know.
Where do you keep them?
In the master bedroom, where in the shelving where I would normally, normal people put t-shirts and jeans.
So they're not even displayed.
No, but it's ceiling to floor.
God. Q, do you have anything?
It's kind of boring, but it's bobbleheads.
Yeah.
I've got a shelf. It started out as just like, oh, you would go to a Royals game and you would get it. But it's gotten to the point now where, like, if my grandma, she went to the thrift store like maybe a week and a half before Christmas, and she, part of my Christmas gift were 2 Royals bobbleheads that she found at the thrift store.
Yeah.
So I now have basically an entire shelf. It's like a bookshelf that's Royals bobbleheads. So
that's not, but that's kind of cool. And it's
my bobbleheads are cool.
Yeah,
I love my bobbleheads.
Them in and out.
Yeah.
I told you a long time ago, my grandmother used to always bring me a thimble, like the little ceramic thimbles.
You still have them?
Yeah, I do. And
where are they displayed?
They are. I used to joke with her that, you know, she, her entire life would bring me a thimble from wherever they traveled in retirement. And I would not really understand, like, okay, this is kind of cool, but like,
what am I going to do?
Right. What am I going to do with these? But then as I got older, I used to love, it's something physical I can touch that reminds me of her.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And I used to joke that as she got older and I started traveling as a young adult, I would bring her thimbles and she didn't know why I was doing it either. And when she passed, I got all of them. And they're in a little display case that she owned that I keep. And every once in a while, I pull one out and look at it and play with it and put it back. Hmm. But those are so tiny. They don't take up.
Yeah.
The snow village. Oh, my. That is a chore.
A little much. Yeah.
That is a chore.
I used to collect ex-girlfriends.
Wow. Did not see that coming.
Come on. That was just just a joke.
It's very funny.
You know, I can still remember the first CD I ever bought. It was Prince's Diamonds and Pearls.
Yeah, we would have been in college, probably.
1991. I was a junior at KU. I bought my first CD.
Do you still have it?
I do. Remember this moment. This is from the New York Post. Remember this moment because it probably won't last. A U.S. lottery jackpot is projected to soar above $1 billion, and it's still a big deal. Today's Mega Millions drawing is worth an estimated $1.22 billion, making headlines and likely luring more people to convenience stores with dreams of private spacewalks above the earth. No. It doesn't seem to matter that the nation's top 10 jackpots, not including this one, already have boasted 10-figure payouts. Mega Millions ticket prices will rise from $2 to $5, by the way, in April. And that's when they say every jackpot's going to go above $1 billion. The increase will be one of many changes officials say will result in improved jackpot odds, more frequent giant prizes, and even larger payouts. Okay.
Want to remind everybody the texting and driving ban in Missouri goes into effect next week. Like actual, with teeth behind it, they will start fining you next week. The Siddons Benning hands-free law says you can no longer physically hold or support your cell phone with any part of your body while driving the car. What does that mean?
That means you
put it on my shoulder?
You can't have it in your lap.
You can't have it in your lap between your legs.
Why?
You can't have it in your hand. It has to be off to the side.
Manually typing, writing, sending, or reading text messages, you could be fined for. Recording, posting, sending, or broadcast video. Watching a video or movie.
I think this is good.
The law was actually enacted back in 2023, but it came with a 16-month grace period. That grace period ends now. I mean, basically starting this next
January
week,
1st,
you
I
are
think.
Going to be yeah. fined.
So next Wednesday.
By the way, Scott, first offenders, it is a $150 fine.
See, I don't even think that's enough.
It's a $150 fine. Remind your children, remind your teenagers, $150. They don't even fine you that for, like, parking in front of a fire hydrant.
No, but that parking in front of a fire hydrant, there are ways around it. We can still get the water out. We're just going to run the hose right through your car. So you're not putting anybody's life at danger technically. Have you not, like, driven down the road lately and just kind of, when the sun's still up, which is rare, look left to right or something, just see the person in the car next to you? I cannot remember the last time I drove to work.
This is going to be like shooting fish in a barrel if you're a police officer in Missouri.
Well, I don't know about that because this morning I'm on the phone with my brother and I have a cop to my right and somebody just does a U-ey right there on the road. I'm like, oh, that's illegal. Woo! People don't even, when you're on your phone texting or watching a video or whatever, you're not paying attention to the people who are around you. And sometimes, every once in a while, that person around you happens to be a cop.
If you are caught in an active school or work zone, like a construction zone or a school zone,
I'm all for it.
It is a $500 fine.
Good.
It's supposed to be a secondary offense, by the way.
So, wait, you have to break another law first?
I don't think it's that hard for them to figure out that you're breaking another law. What's going to happen, Scott, is that you're pulled over for speeding, whatever.
Yeah.
Officer comes to your window, looks down, and your cell phone is on your lap where I keep mine. Boom. It could be $250.
But if you live in Missouri and you know the law and you know they're cracking down on this.
Why can't I put it in my lap?
Because it's an easy place for you to look down and read it when it goes off. That's what they're trying. They're trying to keep you from becoming distracted when you drive.
Well, I'm eating a burger and applying makeup.
I agree with that, too.
There are a lot of other ways drivers can be distracted.
You're absolutely right. Quick break. We're 1 hour away from Festivus Friday, the airing of the grievances. It is brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fix today at Q39KC.com. The news is next here on Dana and Parks. Well, I'm standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, and such a fine sight to see.